Hi, and welcome to What's Happening, Behind the Scenes with Trauma Recovery HAP. I'm Carol Martin, host of this podcast and Executive Director of Trauma Recovery, EMDR Humanitarian Assistance Programs. I'm thrilled to bring you inside the amazing community of HAP to share our history of bringing trauma healing to those in need throughout the world, and to tell the stories of real impact our organization makes every day. Today's guest probably doesn't require an introduction for many of our listeners. But for those listeners new to the HAP family, today's guest, Carol Forgash, has made and continues to make invaluable contributions to the EMDR therapy community and to our organization. Carol is a licensed clinical social worker, a certified EMDR therapist and consultant, and a former EMDR Institute facilitator. She is also an internationally known lecturer and consultant on EMDR therapy and ego state therapy, treating complex PTSD and on ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. Carol supported HAP as a volunteer, a donor, as former president of the board of directors, and in numerous other ways. She's also provided me with wonderful support and knowledge about the history of this organization as I've moved through my few years here. Carol, thank you so much for joining me. I always look forward to our conversations, and today is no different. And Carol is just plain a lot of fun. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you. I expect to have more fun today as we continue our years-long conversations about HAP.
I agree. You shared with me that earlier in your career, you were working in early elementary education, then social work, which led to your interest in trauma, PTSD, and eventually EMDR therapy. How did you get involved with this organization?
Well, actually, it was because I started going to the annual EMDRIA conferences, and I heard the buzz about something new going on that wasn't just about therapy and about EMDR therapy, but involving disaster relief, and I guess we'd call it remediation, although that word wasn't so prevalent in those days. And I heard people talking at the conferences, and it seemed really interesting because in my earlier life, pre-EMDR, I had been something of a social justice activist, and I did a lot of work with the survivor community of child abuse and domestic violence. And so I heard about this group that was working and started after Oklahoma City, and was engaging EMDR therapists all over the country to go out in the field and do work at the time of a disaster. And I said, I want to be there. I want to do that. And that's how it started.
And you were there. And you'll tell us later about all the many times that you were there and what you did.
Okay.
Right now, I'm going to ask you a little bit about, why does the mission and work of HAP resonate with you? What about this work motivates you?
Well, I think my training as a social worker, which is not just sitting on the chair opposite the couch doing therapy, but getting involved in the life cycle of human beings as well as our patients, led me to see that HAP was something that had an immediacy and a specificity about targeting what needed to be done systemically, not just giving money, but getting involved. Although, believe me, I know you know the money is so important, but there was something about you having a choice whether you wanted to work in the field, going to Turkey after an earthquake, going to California after a forest fire, or staying behind the scenes, which I ended up doing more of, working on the board, helping to organize this organization. And so there was such a variety of things to do. It really excited me.
And I can tell that. I can tell that by the stories you've told me. I know that from hearing others talk about your involvement. Maybe you want to tell me a little bit about a memory or experience from your time with HAP that deeply impacted you.
Well, we have all day.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering. You have to choose a few.
Okay, so I'll put them in sort of reverse order. One was, I was asked to go to Thailand after the tsunami, about 6 months after we had sent in various groups of people to train therapist in EMDR. And at this point, the therapists were going out into the countryside near Phuket, where people had been terribly impacted by the tsunami. People were dislocated. People had lost many loved ones. Trucks and buses and boats were all jumbled up in the streets miles from the shore. And I didn't speak any Thai, and most of the Thai therapists didn't speak any English, but we found one of the leaders who had some of both, and she took me around as my interpreter. And I heard the most extraordinary stories from people who had babies torn from their arms and felt as Buddhists that they were evil sinners because they couldn't save everybody. And they hadn't been sleeping and they hadn't been eating. And I got to observe 2-3 days in a row of people who had had some really under torn off house roofs and other debris sitting on the ground getting an EMDR session. And they were all reporting that there were the most miraculous changes. And I knew how EMDR worked already, of course, but this was under terrible conditions, we were getting the most amazing work done. So that was one really extraordinary experience. And another one was after 9/11, when I was able to use my networking here on Long Island where I live to put together a kind of a coalition of groups that would help us advertise that we were giving free EMDR to anybody who'd been involved with 9/11 in any way. Mm. And I ended up organizing that on Long Island and working with the New York City people as well. And eventually I saw several first responders as my EMDR clients. And that was both an upsetting and a gratifying experience. And I saw how HAP could really mobilize and get to work. And that was part of the roots for all of us about forming trauma recovery networks, because we saw how important it was to be organized in advance of a disaster and not playing catch up afterwards.
You know, it sounds to me like a lot of why the mission and work of HAP resonates with you is seeing the effectiveness, seeing the ways of which it can help communities and just people that are struggling and suffering. And so it's wonderful that you could do this. Any other stories, Carol?
Well, I have a good one that sort of backfired on me, but not on the organization. So I'll tell that. Many years ago, Bob Gelbach, who was our second executive director who preceded you, and I and the board had been talking about this relatively new idea in American mental health, which is to be prepared, as the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts always said. Be prepared, meaning you don't show up at the scene of a disaster and say, hey, I'm here from HAP. I'm here to help you. Because people will look at you and say, who are you? What's your credentials, et cetera? So with that in mind, I was facilitating to the EMDR Institute at that time. And I went to Minneapolis to do my workshop on complex trauma, prepared to talk about this new concept called the Trauma Recovery Network, or TRN. As I flew over the Mississippi, from St. Paul to Minneapolis, I noticed that the bridges over the Mississippi River looked a lot worse than the bridges over the East River in New York City. And that's saying a lot, because our bridges were not in great shape either at that time. And I just looked at those bridges and I said, what would the city do if a bridge went down? And I couldn't shake that thought. So I get to the two and a half day workshop. And on the second day, after I finish my workshop, we come back to the whole group to say goodbye and debrief. And I give my pitch for HAP. Being on the board, I was kind of the designated speaker. And I said, I have a question for all of you. I know you're tired, but put your thinking caps on for a minute and tell me, what do you think you Minneapolis EMDR therapists would do if the bridge went down? And I told them about the bridges I had seen crossing the river. People kind of did a collective shudder and say, well, we could offer services. I said, yeah, you could, but wouldn't it be much better off if you started offering the idea of these services now? Put together a group of people who are willing to work pro bono and introduce yourself to all the power players in the city so that you'd be available if something like that happened. And then you'd be available for any other thing that happened. Well, we just chatted and I gave them my number and I gave them Bob's number at HAP and I went home. And about 2 weeks later, 2007, this was, the bridge went down. And I got a series of some interested, incredulous, and really nasty emails asking me if I was a witch and why had I predicted such a thing?
What?
As if I had any power at all. Well, people were pretty shaken up and they were sort of kidding, but kind of shocked at the same time. Well, as it turned out, there were 13 people were killed, but there were very few other injuries, including the school buses did not fall off the bridge, luckily. And so a group of people in the area did get together and try to offer services, but it turned out that the real need for services at that time was an influx of immigrants, both from Latin America and from Vietnam, Cambodia. And those people had very few bilingual therapists trained in EMDR. So the local group of EMDR therapists ended up getting a training together for that group of therapists who could then provide services to the immigrant community. So it had a different way of working out, as these things often do, but I have a reputation in the EMDR community there for being a witch.
And you know what? I don't believe a word of it. No, I'm just teasing. It's funny how you see things. And you know, it's how sometimes really bad things can turn into something positive. Mm-hmm. The EMDR community in that area is quite strong. And there's been a lot of, we have a relatively new trainer from that area. We have a lot of people from that area who, in fact, do provide EMDR therapy and volunteer with us. So your legacy is well served. You also mentioned that often you do work behind the scenes rather than work, as you just described, in the field. What about that part motivates you? How does that mission extend to actually wanting to get on the phone and talk with me about doing X, Y, or Z as the organization moves forward?
Well, when I'm not the first round of people who were on the HAP board. Probably I was the second or third, but we were still pretty much in a kind of an anecdote that I remember from my childhood, where we used to watch movies with Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, where these talented youngsters would put on a show in a barn somewhere. And then somebody would get the idea about taking it to Broadway and being ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. And these kids that being the movies miraculously ended up on Broadway. But for us, it wasn't going to be that easy. We were very informally networked. We were not organized in any way. So during my time on the board, I had to get to know what we did, first of all, and we all grew in that way together. And then we began to hire people. Barbara Corson was our first paid director, and then we were able to get a part-time secretary. And it's only grown from there into the office we have today under your leadership. So being on the board really taught me a great deal about how to get an organization ready for prime time.
And one of the other questions I have, which is, I think relates to this, is, how would you say this organization has changed and grown since your tenure on the board?
Well, on a day-to-day level, I don't know much about what's going on. You give me updates now and then, which is great because I want to keep my hand in some way. But certainly we are in a place now where we can apply for really major grants. Right. And we have Sally Parmalee on board to help us get major grants from and big donor campaigns, things we could not do in the beginning. We're much more linked in with the EMDR HAPs of all over the world. And we can respond, not the way we used to, which is where we had to send people right away to do the work, but we can help support the groups that are already existing now in all parts of the world. And to me, that's extremely exciting.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it is a conundrum, because a lot of times people really do like to go there and see the difference that Americans love to go and see the difference that they're making. But that is certainly not what is the most effective way of providing help in more remote areas. If we can get people trained there, as you know, then we can build capacity so that they can provide that training. I know that you were in, you went to EMDR Asia, you were in India. Mm-hmm. And observed just that. Maybe you want to share a little bit about that and how, what a difference it was and how from a decade earlier.
Well, a decade earlier, we would have had to do initial trainings and then return to do supervision. And between technology and our own growing sophistication, we're now in a place where you, for example, I did a workshop in India, in Mumbai, about complex trauma, and another one about health issues that we can help be helpful to people with in terms of EMDR therapy. And because of the technology, I was able to meet with some of those people afterwards on a Zoom call to give them a little bit further work in an area that they really had questions about. So just technology alone is helping us not have to be everywhere all the time.
Right. It is expanding our reach and allowing people that could never have received this kind of education and information that opportunity. I agree with you.
Especially because of the pandemic. We switched our whole, talk about growth and sophistication. We switched our entire training operation pretty much to online, right?
We sure did. And you can ask any of the staff. That was not an easy task. And we still continue to learn how to do that better. So I think that we are pleased that we're able to do it, and also know that we need to also engage people in person over the next year as well.
Absolutely. I got to see the difference because I did my first workshop in India in 2019, which is probably the last place I've traveled to. And I did that in person. And then about a year ago, I did another one online for them. And I think they worked that fine in both different ways. And it's certainly been a learning experience for me to organize a Zoom workshop and work for 8 hours or 6 to 8 hours from the comfort of my own home. Yeah. It was a great experience.
I've heard that from so many people. And the other thing about it is it allows you to actually do it without putting yourself at any health risk with the COVID possibility hanging over your head. So I'm so pleased that you could do that. I know that EMDR Asia was quite pleased that you were there for them, as you always are.
I was happy to do it, and I enjoyed it immensely. And I've had a chance to travel the world. I mean, this is something people don't often get asked about, but on a personal level, traveling because of HAP and EMDR lecturing in general has been a mind-blowing experience for me. I've got more cultures than I probably would have been able to do if it was just a vacation.
Absolutely. And not only that, I found, and you've shared with me and other people have shared with me, that you really make friends from those trips.
Absolutely.
People that you know for a lifetime, you can ask them to help you and you will help them out. And I know you have many of those friends, Carol. If you had a piece of advice to give someone just starting out in the EMDR field, what would that be?
Oh, I'm going to be happy to talk about that one. Therapy, doing therapy, any kind of therapy, is a very isolated job, especially psychotherapy, when you're dealing directly with a client and you're not going to be able to call your friends the next hour and say, listen, let me tell you what just happened here. So you're working often in isolation, and there are ways to make therapy experiences a lot more fertile for the therapist. And one of them is to be involved in a community. In this case, getting involved with HAP from the beginning gives you a basis to have peer consultation, additional training, community involvement, disaster relief. It's just a wonderful, it's like having a full deck of cards instead of having just one card to sit with by yourself. So I would say, counteract that by getting involved with HAP. You'll be doing great work, you'll meet great friends, and you'll have an opportunity to move in the direction that your talent takes you. Nobody said to me, if I was on the board, I couldn't do something else with HAP.
No, and in fact, we want most of the people that are involved with us have a lot of other commitments and activities, but this is one of them. And we have been forever grateful that you've decided this is the one for you, because, it's meant a lot to me, and I think it's meant a lot to you.
So it's been a big deal to me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate talking to you today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to What's Happening Behind the Scenes with Trauma Recovery. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Find our latest episode and more on our website, www.emdrhap.org. I'm your host, Carol Martin. Thanks, and see you next time.